Hello, and welcome to Send Parenting Balance podcast. My name is Katie Walker, and I talk all things parenting children with autism, ADHD, PDA, and/or any other associated mental health difficulties. Today's topic, we're going to dive straight in. It is Help, My Child is Controlling Me. I've had quite a few requests for this one, and I had a terrible time with my daughter with exactly this behavior. So I figured that I would share my thoughts. One of the most frequent frustrations that I have in my inbox on social media is that of child control. I've heard so many stories of not allowing parents outside of the home, not allowing parents to have conversations, or even who they are friends with. Those that have no experience of this will likely roll their eyes and wonder how on earth has a child got that much control and why is the child allowed that much control? Let me explain. Children can have meltdowns, screaming fits, crying episodes, school attendance difficulties, and so many other behaviours that mean that alongside other siblings or caring responsibilities, it can become easier for the parent or carer not to do these things, such as converse with a friend, as it does to deal with the fallout if they do. This particular topic is close to my own heart. My daughter, now nearly 14, at around the age of 8 years old, had huge control in my own household, and it got to the level where I wondered how we got here. I couldn't converse with my mum when she came round because my daughter would monopolise every conversation, literally from beginning to end. And if I put firm boundaries in place, the fallout was so much that it took at least 2 days to recover. And the screaming, crying, meltdowns in the moment meant the conversation was never had anyway. My daughter hated me wearing makeup and would beat me down so much in the hope to control whether I wore it that some days really were unbearable. Interestingly, both of my children like me to look a certain way. They like the mum look. Should I ever wear a dress or something other than joggers and a t-shirt, I would get the same level of discomfort from the children as I would if I was to wear makeup. Some days it became not worth the hassle, especially when my children have multiple other needs that need to be met. My children don't like me mixing with others, even family members that come into the home, because they instantly know that my attention is then divided and it can cause them to have meltdowns. If we went to birthday parties, interestingly, I was never allowed to speak to other parents, and I would have to sit at a different table with my daughter, literally just me and my daughter. She would also control the other people in the house when I was not in the house. For example, she would tell the babysitter what she could and could not say, or how to behave, and not to do things like kindly wash up for me, because that was what mummy did, and the babysitter was not mummy, so don't do that. It was horrendous. It was isolating, and other people were noticing and indeed commenting. I remember other parents inviting me to sit with them at a child's party or coming over to make conversation with me, and I must have come across so rude as I had to sit with my daughter and calm her anxiety and try not to engage. The level of control was massive. So I totally understood why parents feel claustrophobic and stuck between a rock and a hard place. It is already isolating being a parent or carer to a neurospicy child, but to have this extra layer of isolation put in place when you are able to finally speak to another human being, for example, at the school or at a child's party or at a football match, or if you bump into someone in a shop, can feel unbearable at times. So, what should you do? Well, again, it depends on the why. As with every behaviour, a need. The why is really important. Without the why, fixing the problem can be lengthy and sometimes hindering if we're trying lots of different interventions one after the other and therefore not being consistent and also not getting it right. My daughter's level of control was, in my opinion, for two reasons. Firstly, for reason one, her dad left when she was 7 years old, the no contact version of leaving. So it was completely, she didn't even see him at weekends. And this caused so much realization for her that people can just leave. And she tightened the reins on me massively after he left. She knew that she was different, having ADHD, autism, anxiety, and a sleep disorder. And so she also knew that she could be a little difficult. She was fiercely an over-the-top amount of scared that I too would leave her. If she had it her own way, I swear she would have shut the world out and locked me in and kept me to herself in the most unhealthy ways. I sometimes felt that this would be the only thing I could do to make her feel better, which was a toxic level of not okay on any level, to be honest. Reason number two was that she has additional needs, autism and PDA, which meant she always had a medium level attachment issue with me. And the PDA profile within her autism meant that she had to be in high levels of control to feel safe at all times to lower her own anxiety. So there are two very big reasons that were very hard to deal with, and I had to try and muddle my way through. So what should you do? Well, there's no right or wrong way. To be clear, there's never a wrong way. So many parents often say, I'm doing it all wrong. No, you're not doing it wrong. You're trying your absolute hardest on something that hasn't worked. That's okay. Be kind to yourself. We're not mind readers. Special needs are so complex, and there's no manual because every child shows different difficulties with autism, ADHD, and/or PDA, and children respond differently to interventions and support that works. So be kind to yourself while you're trying to find your way through. This, I'm going to call it controlling phase, can just be a phase which will reduce over time. So waiting it out can be one option. Some parents don't mind dealing with the difficulties in the moment and waiting it out, so to speak, and that's okay. Other parents, however, worry that the control may become worse if it's just left, and so wish to try and do different interventions, and that's okay too. Both options are valid. I did try and place in some interventions with some behaviours and ignored others. I picked which battles I was going to do. With some of my daughter's reactions, for example, crying or storming off and sitting on the opposite side of the park, if I was to speak to a friend in the park that I'd bumped into, I wouldn't stop talking to my friend. I would continue to speak to my friend. My child wasn't hurting themselves or anyone else, and they weren't doing anything dangerous, such as running off. And so I was able to put in a boundary. What I would do is I would only speak to my friends for 10 minutes, and then I would go and sit with Emily for 10 minutes. And then I'd go back to my friend for 10 minutes, and then I'd go back to Emily for 10 minutes, etc. And what this would do is it would teach her that I know she feels uncomfortable with me mixing with a friend, but she is safe. And she too can still be important to me. In non-angry and quieter times, for example, bedtime, I would often talk to her in a non-direct way and say things like, Mummy needs a friend. It's really important that Mummy too can speak to somebody else and that she, Emily, is still very important to me and reassure her that she's safe and that I'm not leaving. It was really important that I kept doing that whenever I bumped into somebody within the local community. It was an intervention, so to speak, and I would quite often explain to my friend what I would be doing. However, in doing this, I had to try and gain back her trust in the in 1 minute scenario. Do you say to your child or children in 1 minute? With particularly demanding children like mine, how many times do you say in a minute? And the minute turns into 20 minutes, or in my case, if they stop going on about it, it can sometimes turn into never. For children with autism, ADHD, and/or PDA, this can be very confusing and gives them evidence that what you say is not safe or true. So I bought a timer, which was for me actually. And so when I said in a minute, I actually turned the timer. Even if I had to stop the dinner on the stove for a moment, this was actually really hard to do in the moment, but it did gain back her trust. And I became really aware of me saying in 1 minute. I would have to change it sometimes to in 5 minutes. which worked quite well, and it did gain back my daughter's trust over time. I also tried to teach her that it is okay for others to talk too. When in conversations, she would monopolize conversations from the beginning to the end and not let me get a word in edgeways. Taking it in turns in talking is okay, and I had to teach her this. This was the hardest thing to teach. I would need to remind her that after 20 minutes of verbal diarrhea and controlling the conversation, that it was indeed someone else's turn to talk. Now, in the beginning, she would storm off, but again, while not hurting herself or others or doing any dangerous behaviours, it was kind of okay for her to do that. I would still keep that boundary. I would always offer for her to come back after the other person had had their turn in talking, and I wouldn't give up on her, but she would often choose not to join back in. This I would treat the same way as I've previously mentioned, and I would speak to her in a quieter time, a bit later on when things were calmer, to put her mind at rest that I really wanted her to come back into the conversation and join in, but just after somebody else had had a turn. In cases such as, in my case, wearing dresses or makeup, I held my own boundaries and I would continue to do so. I would quite often reply with, "I'm sorry you feel that way," to every hate comment that came my way. By replying with a comment like this, it shut down the conversation very quickly. I wasn't going to engage in an argument about it or heighten anyone's already high anxiety. I would reassure that I can wear makeup and still be mummy. I can wear makeup and still be here for you and show up for you in the ways you want me to. So I'm sorry you feel that way. The difficult one was at parties with other parents. The control where she wanted me to sit separately from the other parents and just sit with her. This was so much more tricky. And with this one, I did succumb to sitting separately, purely because it was a large group of mums who did not know me or my daughter. I couldn't explain it easily in front of Emily in fear of making her feel different. And so actually, it was easier to sit separate, and it was incredibly isolating. However, very quickly, due to myself feeling isolated, I did stop taking her to parties in the end and try and get someone to sit with her. And as it happens, it wasn't very long, only a few months, and my youngest Harry got to an age whereby parties got too difficult for his needs, and so his circumstances changed. And lo and behold, we don't go to parties anymore. So it was a short-lived phase. If, however, my child was to respond with dangerous behaviours or harm to herself or others, then obviously I wouldn't be able to do the examples that I've spoken about, and I would need to succumb to her requests and hope that speaking at times such as bedtime, constant reassurance, and child CBT activities would work. I teach these child CBT activities in my Breaking Barriers, Building Belief course. I have spaces. Please check it out at www.sendparentingbalance.com for how to book. It can be a pre-recorded session for you to access at a time that suits you. Alternatively, a group online session with me every week for 6 weeks. These child CBT methods will break down fears and anxieties in the hope for independence moving forward and a healthier attitude for attachments. Lastly, one other thing that I did was to increase the amount of love I pushed Emily's way. She was clearly struggling with finding her place and her attachment with me, so I had to go over the top in reminding her how special she was to me. Initially, I thought that this might make her attachment worse by, of course, pulling her in even closer, but actually, it had the opposite effect. It made her feel safe. So, for example, if I was talking to a friend, I would make a love heart shape with my hands, or I would hold her hand, or I would blow her a kiss if she was playing. I would send her frequent text messages as she got old enough to have her phone, send her silly little videos. I would sit on her bed at night time with my hot drink and tell her three things that I loved that she did that day, so she could see that I was fully present in all things Emily, and that she could feel and see loved, and so that it was overly obvious to her. The single most important thing to a PDA individual is their autonomy to decide things for themselves and be in complete control of what they do and where they're going. The PDA element of control is very important. I do have a PDA podcast. Do go over and check it out separately. The suggestions can help change the way we interact with children who have PDA and therefore decrease the anxiety and the control or need for control in any given situation. These methods are also covered in detail in the Breaking Barriers, Building Belief course that I mentioned earlier. So, moving forward, establish your rules in each scenario. Like I've broken down my different scenarios with you. Think about each controlling situation that you would like to change and how you will manage it moving forward. For example, if like me, it's whether you have makeup on, you may respond with a phrase. Alternatively, in the example of speaking with a friend at the park, you may teach your child within small slots of time that they are still safe and still wanted. Once you've decided how you want to handle it, stay consistent. Meet all resistance and hate from your child with love every single time and sit patient. I was recently speaking to a parent about their child not wanting them to go out, even if the child wasn't home and at their dad's. In a case such as this, you could choose to not tell your daughter you went out, and if she asks, you can just not tell her. Alternatively, you could tell her and work through those attachments and fears that she has. If it were me, I would pick my battles and probably not let my child know that I'd been out. All of these attachment phases do tend to be phases that are slowly outgrown. However, of course, there are always some cases in which they're not, hence why sometimes it can be better to do a mixture. Picking your battles and working on the most controlling and isolating behaviours while putting the other ones to one side while you do so. Remember, whatever you do, it won't be wrong. There are many things you could try. I hope you found this podcast useful in not only understanding where controlling behaviours may come from, but also how we can manage them. I also hope you feel less alone with your child that seems to be taking over right now. I can assure you that my child is now nearly 14 and all of these behaviours have now subsided, and it was indeed a very isolating and difficult phase. As always, you can find me at www.sendparentingbalance.com. Please do remember to sign up to the website. It is, of course, free to receive monthly mail from me about anything new up and coming. And also, don't forget that for free, you can join up to the community chat available on the website to feel less isolated and alone with your own difficulties of parenting a child with autism, ADHD, and PDA. On the community chat rooms, you will find myself, but also lots of other parents going through very similar situations where we all kind of brainstorm and support one another. It's a really lovely community hub. As always, I do hope you enjoyed the podcast and that you're kind to yourself today, and I look forward to seeing you next time. Take care.